Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. You know, in the Trump era, some comedians say the jokes write themselves, right? And if you say they want to talk about anything but the president when they're on stage. Stand-up Aparna Nancherla, though, says she's just ready.
Yeah, I am someone who has a lot of anxiety, and it is weird that anxiety is finally on message. Like, if you're an anxious person, it's kind of like, well, you know, this is what we trained for. Like, this is our Olympics. It's like all those nights awake, like it's showtime, you know? All the scenarios at once.
That's part of Aparna Nancherla's newest half-hour special premiering today as part of the stand-up series from Netflix. Nancherla doesn't talk much about politics in the new Netflix special, but she has carved out a rising career in the comedy world, writing for Late Night with Seth Meyers and voicing a key character in the fourth season of the Netflix animated series BoJack Horseman.
My name is Hollyhock, Mannheim, Mannheim, Guerrero, Robinson, Zilberschlag, Sungfon, Zarelli, McQuack.
Wait. What's your first name?
Hollyhock.
Wait, what's your last name?
I know, it's confusing. I have eight dads.
But even as her work brings her in front of bigger and bigger audiences, Nancherla says she's...
introvert, at times violently quiet, honest.
I sat down with Aparna Nancherla recently, and she explained why, for comedy, she considers it a strength.
I would say a fair number of comedians are introverts in that we sort of absorb the world pretty over-analytically with like just an overactive brain. And then the most comfortable way to retranslate those thoughts into a, you know, public way is like in front of a bunch of strangers, which I think could be something further delved into in therapy. But yeah, I think there's some catharsis to it. I think I've always wanted to perform, but not, you know, not felt like necessarily like I was a theater person or anything. So sort of when I happened on stand-up, I was like, oh, this works. It's essentially just like reading diary entries out loud.
Easier to do it in front of like 300 faceless people who you don't know rather than, you know, one-on-one or...
Oh, yeah. Like, I still think, like, a theater is less stressful to me than, like, a coffee shop with, like, 10 people where you can see all their faces.
So you have a new stand-up special. You've done some writing as well.
Yeah.
For TV. You worked on some of the late-night shows with Seth Meyers, a couple of other ones.
Yeah. The first writing job I had was actually what brought me to New York, which was totally biased with W. Kamau Bell, which was a show that ran for two seasons on FX. He was a comic who was out of the Bay Area and sort of very left-leaning and socially progressive. And so we would talk about a lot of social justice issues. And I think that was the first time I think I got a little bit more politically active and aware as a whole.
What was the writer's room like for you? The rap on places like that is that they're overwhelmingly white and male. I don't know if that's still the case or what it was like for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I lucked out in that first job with Totally Biased because it was kind of a more liberal bent and trying to do something different. The writer's room was probably on the more diverse end of things. Like, I would say the Caucasian persuasion was the minority in the room. And there were, I think we were up to three women, maybe two women the first season. But I think it was maybe the abnormal end of things in terms of being a lot more progressive and diverse and having a lot of different experiences represented in the room. So I think that kind of set a foundation for me of like, oh, this can also be normal. You just have to sometimes make that effort. But yeah, I think it's interesting. The late night model, I think some people would argue, is now getting a little outdated. And it's like, you know, it's still kind of stuck in a very specific formula that hasn't been broken for many years. And some people think that like talk shows should move in different directions. But I think I learned overall from working in those environments that maybe it's not quite the perfect environment for me, just that it is a grind of like you're making a different show every day and that you kind of have to reset. But I think for me, I was like, offices make me restless anyway, maybe from PTSD to temping or something. So I think I am better suited to be like, I'll just, you know, wander the city and tweet twice.
Now, you talk about Twitter in your Netflix special,
yes,
in your Netflix set. And Twitter has this just fascinating role for comics now, right? There's these, it seems like, hundreds of great Twitter comedians who've risen up out of nowhere because of this format. In that way, it seems like it's been a boon for comedy, but I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the internet has sort of changed the game in terms of who are the gatekeepers now for comedy and how people find an audience or are first seen. So in that sense, I think it's at least provided accessibility that wasn't there before for a lot of people.
But look, Twitter has done great things for comedy. It also allows your audience mm-hmm. and your trolls and your hecklers to have direct access to you. You talk about this as well and yeah. what that experience is like.
You know, as a comedian, you get a lot of feedback online. Sometimes people are nice, but other times they're like, instead of doing comedy, I wish you were made of bees, you know, or whatever it is. This is one of the meanest comments I've gotten. Jesus Christ, you're perhaps the ugliest human on the planet. But then again, I haven't left the planet. Again, I enjoy this one because there's an introspective shift. The nice thing about social media is like you might get more hecklers, quote unquote, as trolls are online, but you can just mute or block them, which is so much easier than a show where you can't just be like, silence.
Do you feel the need, though, to respond to your trolls online? One of the gauntlets of comedy on stage, right? Mm-hmm. And tell me if this is wrong, is totally owning a heckler.
Sure.
Right? You try to own a troll or you just ignore them?
I think if, you know, if they catch me at an emotionally vulnerable moment, I might respond and then immediately mute so I can't further engage with them, which is not that fair because it is essentially like doing a snappy comeback and then just leaving the room. But I think it is like how much time and energy do you want to put into addressing people who are probably at the most just looking for a reaction.
Well, also culling material because it's provided you with some good material for
That's
your
true.
For your act too.
I should give them more credit.
That's part of the thing about trolling is that people expect to insult you or demean you and then sort of scurry off into the dark.
Sure.
You make them part of the act.
Well, I also think I'm always fascinated with trolls because I myself have a very loud inner critic. I'm sort of fascinated with the idea of criticism as a whole and the way we judge ourselves and how that leads us to judge others. And so essentially trolling to me feels like a lot of people are probably unhappy with their own place in life or they're not getting enough satisfaction that they have to sort of take it out on other people. So I think there is something at the heart of it that as a undergrad psych major, I find interesting.
Your inner critic, though, if it were quieter or mm-hmm. nicer, would you be as funny?
I always go back and forth on this argument where it's like the more tortured you are, the better you are at art, because I do think as someone who's dealt with mental health over pretty much most of my life and went on antidepressants, and that actually was the first thing that helped me to get the courage to do stand up. Like, I think I would argue that being able to manage your mental health is, to me, affords me the ability to do comedy more than having that brain in the first place.
Aparna Nancharla stars in the stand-up series on Netflix with a 30-minute set, heading out on the road soon with her comedy all across America, so you can catch her there. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I did ask Aparna what it was like playing an angst-ridden teenage horse on BoJack Horseman. Here's what she said.
I feel like I probably have a part of my teenage self that's still very much alive, so it was kind of easy to just tap back into that.
Well, that's the teenage part of it. Doesn't say a whole lot about the horse part. Anyway, that's our show. Thanks so much for being with us today. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.